Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
And hi there. Welcome. It's beginning to a new week of Catholic Answers Live. I am Jerry Usher filling in, but not for that much longer. If you were listening late last week, you heard at least the general news that a new full-time host has been identified, and they are dotting the I's and crossing the T's, and that announcement will be made at some point in the very near future by the folks at Catholic Answers. So in the meantime, I have maybe a few more days to be with you, and it is always a pleasure and an honor. And today, here's the question for those to whom this applies. Why do you reject Catholic morality? Why do you reject Catholic morality? Now, this covers a lot of ground, as you can imagine. Maybe you are of a mindset that if something is legal, then the act is therefore moral, regardless of what the church says about it. Maybe you struggle with or simply reject a particular Catholic teaching on morality. We can talk about certainly abortion. Maybe you're against abortion, except in cases where the mother's life is in danger, which, of course, the Catholic Church would say abortion in any circumstance is not morally licit. Of course, there's a lot of confusion today about marriage and sexuality. So if there's any Catholic moral teaching that you struggle with, or you just simply outright say, nope, I just can't accept that, this is your chance to call 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. And one of the best is with you to field your questions today. It is Trent Horn. He is a staff apologist at Catholic Answers, a convert to the Catholic faith. He's got a master's degree in theology from Franciscan University of Steubenville and currently pursuing a graduate degree in philosophy from Holy Apostles College. And he has written a number of books, including one, Persuasive Pro-Life, which really deals with a lot of the things we may be talking about today. So, Trent, good to be working with you again, I think for the first time this year, so Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well, Jerry. Great to be here, and I'm very excited to take questions and understand why people reject certain moral teachings of the church.
Yeah, well, as fellow Franciscan University graduates, we are, of course, united with many around the world in mourning the loss of Father Michael Scanlon, who died on Saturday. I know that You probably had a great spot in your heart for him, as so many people did.
Oh, sure. In fact, on my other radio program, Hearts and Minds, we were discussing the passing of Father Scanlon, and that was broadcast. That will be broadcast tomorrow, actually. He made such a profound impact on the Franciscan University of Steubenville. There's a wonderful interview with him in the National Catholic Register that was taken back in 2011 after he retired from being the university's chancellor. And it just shows a man of wonderful heart and holiness, a commitment to orthodoxy, and just a commitment to fight against all odds. He went into a university that was so run down and so financially insolvent that the local bank wondered whether they could even take checks from this university. And he really turned it around into a Orthodox Catholic powerhouse that it's known today. So he will certainly be missed, but his legacy also certainly lives on.
Sure, yeah, and even from a moral standpoint, I know there are a lot of legends out there about the condition of the campus at Franciscan University and some of the things that went on. But yeah, you're right. He certainly maybe as much or more than any priest in the United States. You think about his impact upon millions and millions of people, just right. Not only on that campus, but you've got so many alumni, priests, and religious and people doing lay ministry. So, yeah. Rest in peace, Father Michael Scanlon, for sure.
Absolutely.
So as the calls come in here, Trent, again, 888-318-7884. We are asking a question to some of you, maybe not that many, maybe a lot of you. Why do you reject Catholic morality? And this can be any particular Catholic moral teaching, and there are very many of them. 888-318-7884 is the number for you to be on the program. And Trent, just want to make a plug before we go to the calls. You mentioned this is Sanctity of Life Month. We've got marches for life happening throughout the nation, really around the world. And during this whole month, Catholic Answers is offering your book. I mentioned a Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue. And it's, I can hardly believe this, it's available for only $5. That's a savings of over 70%. Why don't you issue an invitation to people? Why should they get this book, especially now when it's 70% off?
Well, I think it's a wonderful resource. If you're wondering, how do I talk about the issue of abortion? How can I be persuasively pro-life? Speak with those who disagree on this subject. How do I learn all the ins and outs, all the different arguments and facts and statistics? This book is really my handbook that I've created to help Catholics, to help anyone really, talk about the issue of abortion and how to defend the pro-life perspective and how to do it, how to defend that position using science, using philosophy, using logical reasoning, using arguments that any reasonable person can understand and accept. And that's our goal in the pro-life movement, is to restore the legal recognition for the rights of unborn children. And to do that, we put forward arguments that any reasonable person can recognize that are not essentially religious, that can be put into law, that just as we would respect the rights of two-year-olds or the elderly, we should respect the unborn. And my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, covers all of that ground. It's been praised from all kinds of different pro-life leaders like Father Frank Pavone, Lila Rose, Patrick Lee at the Franciscan University of Steubenville, one of the bioethics chairs there. So I'd recommend definitely go to Catholic.com, go to shop.catholic.com and get your copy at a reduced price for this pro-life month, and get a few copies. I've known people across the country who have done book studies on persuasive pro-life. So it's a wonderful resource for anyone who wants to make a big impact in the pro-life movement.
It really is. I mean, for the price of what you pay normally for a book like this, you can give a number of copies away. So again, it's just $5 each, savings of over 70%. In fact, the customer service team is open right now and available at 888-291-8000 if you want to be among the first to take advantage of this opportunity. Trent Horn's book, Persuasive Pro-Life, just $5 a copy. 888-291-8000. And more about that as the week and the month goes on. But today we're talking about, why do you reject Catholic morality? Have you tossed aside maybe the church's teachings on end-of-life care? Maybe you've had a loved one, a relative who has suffered greatly, and you just think, well, that we ought to be able to just indiscriminately end their life or pull the plug or withhold nutrition or hydration. All sorts of things we can talk about. Maybe you think, since science came up with a way of avoiding pregnancy through artificial birth control, that the church should just keep its mouth closed and go along with that. So we can talk about anything across the board having to do with Catholic morality at 888-318-7884. Okay, Trent, we got calls ready, as long as you are.
I am.
Okay, we're going to start in the state of Maine, Brunswick, to be exact. John is listening to Catholic Answers Live on the Presence Network. Hi, John. Welcome. You're first today.
Hi, guys. Thank you very much. And just want to say, Trent, thank you for all your work with Pro-Life. I'm with you on that. But one thing I am at least skeptical about with regard to Catholic teaching is the stance on birth control.
I apologize, Jerry, if John's speaking. I can't hear anything.
Oh, can you hear me?
Now I can. Thank you.
Hello? Hello?
Yeah, go right. Start
we
over.
Hear you
rewind
now.
A little bit, John. Go ahead.
Okay, sorry about that. So, yeah, my question is with regard to Catholic teaching on birth control. And my question more has to do with some of the blurred lines of distinction between that and NFP, and even some of the early church fathers, from what I've read, were even opposed to, sex during pregnancy because they were so hard on it. And I don't know, I just didn't see a lot of unanimous consent as far as the church fathers. And I wondered why you guys or Catholics take such a hard stance with regard to contraception and birth control.
Okay, well, I'll briefly touch on the fathers, but let me go to the larger question you brought up, which would be contraception and NFP. When we talk about the unanimous consent of the fathers, we're talking about moral unanimity. The fathers did differ on certain issues, and some they're not infallible in everything that they wrote, but we do see a broad consensus among them on certain key issues. One of them being when it comes to contraception, they were all opposed to the act of sterilizing the sexual act itself. They understood that procreation was an important goal of the marital act, of the sexual act, that, well, sex is supposed to take place in marriage, and it's ordered towards procreation. So they all did agree, at least on that point. And some though, yes, may have had doubts about whether this was licit in pregnancy or not, but they all were certainly in agreement that you couldn't sterilize the act. Now, obviously they didn't have hormonal contraceptives back then, but, you know, there were primitive condoms. There was always coitus interruptus, or the withdrawal method. So there, you won't find fathers who are encouraging the use of contraception or the sterilization of the marital act. There's, I would say, unanimous consent, at least on that point. Even beyond moral unanimity, I don't know any father who would have supported sterilizing the sexual act. So that would be one. Two, then, would just be the issue, why does the church take its particular stand on contraception? And John, you were wondering, why is the church so hard on this? What exactly did you mean by that?
Yeah, I guess not. Yeah, from my understanding, it's a potentially immoral sin for, in particular, coitus interruptus. That too is a moral sin. Not only just the sterilization act of it, but just the using human methods seemed to me similar to NFT. And I didn't know what why one is a grave matter and why NFT is not.
Okay, well, let me take a shot at that answer then. First, I would say that coitus interruptus, or the withdrawal method, is nothing like natural family planning at all. In fact, there is actually only one act of contraception recorded in Scripture, and that would be in Genesis 38, what's called the sin of Onan. And Onan, because he did not want to sire children, let me give you a quick answer here, then we may have to go to a break. Because Onan did not want to sire children from his deceased brother, he practiced coitus interruptus. And Genesis 38, 9 through 10 says that the Lord saw what he did. It was wicked, and struck down Onan for that, actually. To compare this, natural family planning is not an alternative way of engaging in sexual arousal without the sexual act. It is the marital act itself, without anything as a barrier, without any misdirection of the act like you find in coitus interruptus, without anything that's sterilizing the act like some kind of hormonal contraceptive. So natural family planning is not contraceptive in any way, because it's just engaging in the marital act at different times, and there's no time where it's impermissible to engage in that act. But I can break that down a little bit more for you, and I'd be happy to do so probably when we come back. But I know we have to stay on schedule.
All right. John, hang on if you want, and Donato in New Jersey, Tom in Massachusetts, you will be the next couple of callers in line, and we do have a line open here. We are asking the question of anyone to whom it may apply, why do you reject Catholic morality on life, marriage, sexuality? It could be on war. Catholic Church has teachings on war, just war, things like that. So really across the board, having a moral discussion here today, and if there's a particular a point of Catholic moral teaching that you struggle with, or you just simply say, nope, can't accept that. Maybe you used to accept something at one point and something's changed your mind. Join the conversation here with Trent Horn at 888-318-7884.
Don't you just love listening to Trent Horn? Did you know you can book Trent or any of our other great speakers to speak at your parish or special event? Contact one of our seminar coordinators through the Speakers Bureau section on Catholic.com today to find out more information.
Hi, this is Trent Horn, and I'm here with a very special offer for all of you who are interested in standing up for the rights of the unborn. January is Pro-Life Month, and to get as many people as possible involved in the pro-life cause, we're making my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, available for just $5 a copy. That's a savings of over 70%. I wrote this book specifically with you in mind, to help you engage in sustained and meaningful dialogue with the goal of persuading others, to help you to change people's hearts and minds, so that together we might build up a pro-life culture, one person, one conversation at a time. To get your copy of Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue, for just $5, call 1-888-291-8000 or go to the shop at catholic.com.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Matthew 3:13, Jesus appeared before John the Baptist asking to be baptized. John immediately objected. "It is I who should be baptized by you," he said. But Jesus assured him that for this occasion it had to be, since it was the will of his Father. So John consented. When Jesus stepped out of the water after John baptized him, the heavens opened, and the Holy Spirit in the form of a dove hovered over him, while the Father announced, "This is my beloved Son. My favor rests on him." This interchange with John and the voice of the Father embodied John as the last prophet of the Old Law and the beginning of the law's fulfillment in Jesus. All this is to demonstrate that the fulfillment of the Father's will consists in Jesus' redeeming the likes of you and me and everyone else. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Why do you reject Catholic morality, if you do, any aspect of it? Trent Horn is here for not just this hour, but both hours today of Catholic Answers Live. And Trent, John in Maine hung up and wanted to hear if you had just you want to put a little bow and ribbon on this, or do you think we covered it all?
I think we covered it fairly well. I'll just say that it's interesting. I've heard this objection multiple times. People say, well, I don't see the difference between contraception and natural family planning because they both have the same end. You use contraceptives, you don't have a baby. You use natural family planning, you don't have a baby. But just because something has the same ends, it doesn't follow it has the same two actions of the same end, doesn't mean they're morally equivalent. Let's say Bob and Frank both have the end goal of losing weight. So Frank eats healthy and exercises, and Bob just throws up after every meal. Are those both morally equivalent ways to lose weight? At the end of the day, they're both losing weight. Well, certainly not. The method matters, even if the end result is the same. So contraception is directly sterilizing or interfering with the sexual act itself, this precious sacred act that God has given to married couples to consummate and seal the marital love between them, this life-giving, unique love that belongs to men and women in the bond of marriage. Now, and so contraception goes against that act. Natural family planning is just planning when to engage in that act. And as I said, it's always morally permissible for married couples to renew their marital vows in the bodily sense. Then there's nothing wrong with that. So by understanding that just because an ends may be the same, that doesn't follow the methods are morally equivalent. We have to look at the method itself and see, does it go towards how we ought to be as humans? Does it reinforce our human nature? Does it act against our human nature? Is just one among many other questions we would have to look at in comparing different moral acts.
Okay. Go right back to your calls. Donato, thanks for your patience waiting there in New Jersey. Welcome to Catholic Answers Live with Trent Horn. Hello, Donato. How are you?
Yes, gentlemen. Good evening. Thank you for taking my call. I've called the show several times in the past, and it's pretty known with your former host that I'm a traditionalist Catholic. And I'm not calling so much to challenge either of you personally, but I was challenging just in general. I'd like to see what your thoughts are, if we can have an honest discussion on me reversing the question a bit and asking, since Vatican II, what is Rome condemned as something that goes against Catholic morality? Because it just seems to me that every single thing that's been taught in the 2,000-year history of the Catholic faith, as far as things that are immoral, going against abortion, divorce, homosexuality, these are all now the norms in the new church. And it's really, really troubling because, you know, it seems to me the only ones who get condemned for anything are those like myself who file the Tridentine Mass. I see abortion politicians, one after another, being the first in line for so-called Holy Communion, right in Rome. So, you know, it's very, very scary. I think it's, like, quite dishonest, to be totally fair here, that, you know, what's going on here? I mean, they've given up on Catholic morality themselves.
Well, let me answer your first question here. What has the Church condemned since the Second Vatican Council that goes against our culture? I would say plenty. I mean, in 1968, you had the condemnation of contraception that was rejected widespread in the world. It was a courageous act for the Pope to do, for someone to do after the Second Vatican Council. The same you'd find in Pope John Paul II's encyclicals Veritatis Splendor and Evangelium Vitae, condemning abortion, euthanasia. The Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith took a stand against, fertility technology that goes against the human person, like in vitro fertilization, artificial semination. That would be in a 1987 document, Donum Vitae. So I guess it's hard for me to know. Will you at least admit the Church, in those cases, after Vatican II, did teach what you would call traditional Catholic morality?
No, I wouldn't admit that. You know why, Mr. Horn? Because it's one thing to say something, and it's another thing to put it into an application. You know, again, I'm going to ask you why are pro-abortion, openly pro-abortion politicians the first ones in line in Rome, not from errant bishops, like is always excuse me here, receiving holy supposedly Holy Communion from the so-called Vicars of Christ?
Okay, so Donato, it seems to me that you're starting on a wide thing. The Church isn't upholding Catholic morality. When I've shown you where the Church teaches this, as in where it's written down, that's not good enough for you because you seem to be making the case that, well, no, it's actions that matter more than what's written. And it seems to me then, therefore, what you're concerned about is our politicians receiving the Holy Eucharist. Is that just so as opposed to just morality in general, the Church has failed. Now you're down. It's just this one issue about politicians receiving the Eucharist, pro-abortion politicians. That seems to be your main.
Actually, well, since you can't answer that, how about annulments being just rampant as far as any excuse under the sun you can receive that? So obviously they don't believe in marriage anymore. So, I mean, you know, it's like all the writings of the world they had. And by the way, Eugenius, you're talking about from Paul VI, the same document actually like is pro-birth control, if you read that closely. Because he says that couples are, if they don't want to have children, they don't have to have them. So it's actually just a manipulation.
Wait, Donato. Donald, go back to that one. So you think couples should always have children in any circumstance, in any time in their marriage, even if they may have a grave reason not to have children?
But no, the Catholic Church has always taught the reason for marriage is for procreation. That's it. That's exactly the definition of marriage.
Right.
That is the definition of why people are married. And Paul VI, while he condemns birth control in the same document, he actually like, basically gives a pro-birth control statement.
So could a couple have a grave reason, let's say, to abstain from having children over, let's say, a six-month period? Perhaps the wife is very, very ill and pregnancy would endanger her life over this 6 month period, or both the couples have lost jobs and are unemployed or homeless. Would you say that a couple is morally obligated even in that short amount of time that they have to engage in the marital act? You're saying there's no reason a couple might abstain for a few months from having children?
No, what I would say, Mr. Warren, is that Pius XII actually addressed that as allocution to housewives. Italian housewives, I believe that was in the late 50s, a few years before he passed away. But Paul VI, his statement doesn't say anything of that nature at all. He basically gives a free pass for if couples don't want to have children, then so be it. You know, and, you know, the thing is, you haven't answered one thing about the abortion politicians or the annulments or homosexuality.
Okay.
But you have, like, you know, openly homosexual so-called priests up on the altar bragging about their boyfriends.
Okay, all right. Donato, I think that I'm sure you will call back in the future. I think we're going to have to bring this to a close because it's very interesting that you started this conversation wanting to have things in a good-natured conversation. But I think myself, our good host, Mr. Usher, and anyone listening can see this has become very ill-natured with the attitude and tone you've been taking with me. And I'm happy to have a good conversation on these issues. Just because there may be certain Catholics here or there that don't follow what the Church teaches, it does not mean the Church as a whole has abandoned the deposit of faith Christ gave her. And I'm sorry that you feel differently on that issue, and maybe we'll have another conversation another time.
All right, Donato, thanks for calling. We're going to get to more of you with Trent Horn here. Why do you reject Catholic morality? That's our two-hour topic today on Catholic Answers Live. Stay with us.
We're here for you. Call now. Catholic Answers Live.
Talking about abortion can be scary, but so is anything with which you're unfamiliar. People need to learn how to talk about abortion in ways that inspire confidence in the truth of the pro-life position. We must talk about abortion because we are afraid. Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue, is the new book by apologist Trent Horn that teaches you to face those fears, to engage in sustained and meaningful dialogue with the goal of persuading others. Field-tested on college campuses, Persuasive Pro-Life will help you to change people's hearts and minds and begin to build up a pro-life culture in today's world, one person, one conversation at a time. Order your copy of Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue, today by calling 1-888-291-8000, going to Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore in your area. Also available as an ebook.
Did you know that January is Pro-Life Month? What a great way to start out the new year! With rallies and marches for life going on all month long, there's simply no better time to go out and flex your pro-life muscles and preach the gospel of life to those who need desperately to hear it. With great prices and great pro-life resources, like Persuasive Pro-Life, Making the Case for Life, Straight Talk About Abortion, the booklet 20 Answers Abortion, the shop at Catholic.com is your pro-life headquarters. With bulk pricing on most of our pro-life resources, it's a great way to equip your parish pro-life group and save money, too. It only takes one person speaking up to make a difference. Be that person. Join Catholic Answers in celebrating Pro-Life Month. Visit the shop at Catholic.com and equip yourself today.
Good to have you listening today, Catholic Answers Live, starting off a week with 2 hours of Trent Horn answering your questions about why you reject this or that Catholic moral teaching. Maybe you just maybe reject all of it. Love to have a polite, genteel conversation with you at 888-318-7884. Reminder before we go back to our next call that for a $5 bill, that's right, for less than a double pump, triple splash, this coffee mocha thingy, you can get a copy of Trent Horn's book, Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue. Savings of over 70%. That's right, folks. It's discounted by over 70% by the people you trust, your friends at Catholic Answers. So why not order today? You can do it even right now online at Catholic.com. Go to the shop or just call and talk with one of our friendly customer service folks at 888-291-8000. But please do not forget about that offer, because this is Sanctity of Life Month and we want you to have good resources in your hands. Okay, Trent, we're going to talk next with Tom in Topsfield, Massachusetts, listening on the Station of the Cross. Hi, Tom. Thank you for waiting. We appreciate that.
Hello. Years ago, I used to reject a couple of points of Catholic teaching, and that was, I believe, due to an incomplete knowledge of my religion. I used to argue for gay rights. I used to argue for the right for same-sex marriage, and I used to argue for a woman's right to abortion under tragic circumstances. But lately,
so what changed?
I've been listening to Catholic radio and learning more and more and more about Catholicism, and now I no longer reject any of the Catholic teachings. And I think if this had been addressed when I was younger, when I was 12 or 13, and people had had the uncomfortable talks about biology, about what life is and why every life is precious, no matter how it's conceived, that is a creation of, that individual is a creation of God, not just perhaps the tragic circumstances that may have caused the pregnancy, then I think I myself would have been more stalwart in my faith and not rejected the teachings.
Thank you so much, Tom, for that witness. And I think that's so important for our listeners, especially our Catholic listeners on the show today, that when it comes to the moral life, we have to be instilling these principles into children at a young age. I mean, you shouldn't be instilling principles of sexual morality into elementary school students, for example, but principles of honesty, integrity, loving God, loving neighbor. And then as a child matures, helping them to see how those principles apply in areas like sexual morality, in pro-life issues, end-of-life issues. Jerry, when I was giving a seminar on marriage a few weeks ago, I had talked to couples who were in attendance, and they said, I've been to Catholic school my whole life. This is the first time I've ever really heard why the church teaches that you should wait until marriage or why contraception is not a part of God's plan for marriage. So it is boggling for me to see the bitter fruits that are sown because of the lack of catechesis. And the only replacement, the only remedy for that is better catechesis and training of those who teach others, and hoping that, spread throughout the church.
Yeah, and if I can just tag on to that, Trent, and you would, I'm sure, heartily agree with this, it gives us a good reason to not rush to judgment when somebody that we know or love, maybe a family member, friend, a coworker, holds a position such as pro-abortion or right. on sexuality or marriage or something like that, because, we never know what their formation and their training has been. We may think, well, you went through all of Catholic school. You should know better than this, but unfortunately, there are as many different examples of perhaps bad catechesis
as
there
are
people out there.
Someone very close to me said that the only thing they remember from their confirmation program is they were taught why it's bad to litter. Not even making it up, Jerry. No, I'm not making that up. I'm sure they were maybe taught more, but the only thing they remember being driven home was like one day why it's a sin to litter.
We're switching the topic now. The rest of the show is why do you litter? 888. Oh, there's the landline at my sister's house, everybody. 888.
That's someone calling in to defend their littering. Yeah. They're even littering your own home with extra noise. How amazing is that?
I know. They're going around the regular call number. Thank you, Tom. Appreciate that. Stephen is next over in Ellsworth, Michigan with Trent Horn. Hi, Stephen. Welcome. I'll put my mic down and stop the phone ringing in the background. Go ahead, Stephen.
Okay. The caller that called a couple of callers ago, real quick, I can identify with him because I attend the Tridentine Mass, but I also attend the Numbers Total Mass, so there's some things I obviously disagree with what he said about. There are some things in Vatican II that I can appreciate. But my question, I guess, is similar to his because I was told a year ago when I called in to Catholic Answers that child custody matters cannot be talked about on the air because of whatever reason. But I see Catholics, after the Synod and the family, and I hear on Catholic radio, proudly taking on, fearlessly taking on law, federal law, state law, with reference to abortion, for example. But if someone calls in and they say, a great tragedy in modern society is the injustice with child custody, Catholics, priests, Catholic Answers Live, whatever, I hope that doesn't offend you, Catholic Radio, they say, we can't talk about child custody. Oh, we can't take on the law. We can't speak out against the law. Child custody, ooh, women's rights. Can't discuss that issue.
Well, I guess we're talking about it now, so I suppose unless the black helicopters swoop in and the microphones go dead, I'm sure we can continue this discussion for a bit. I don't see – we can discuss that a bit. The church has always taught – about the importance of the wholeness of the family and the rights of a child to be cared for and have a relationship with his mother and his father. Ironically, even the United Nations in their Declaration on the Rights of Children, talks about the rights of a child to be known and loved and cared for as best as possible by their parents. So I would say child custody, in quotations, is not a tragedy, because children must be placed in the custody of somebody. The tragedy would be in the fracturing of the family, that when the family fractures because of usually divorce, then you have the problem, of course, which is the great testament as to why divorce is such a tragic sin in our culture, is that, you know, in divorce, yes, you can divide property, you can divide, you know, vehicles and assets, things, you know, you take your things, you can draw a line between them. You can't divide children, though. Children are not possessions to be divided. And that, it becomes the tragedy of the children who are, you know, who are forced to be shuttled back and forth and are like possessions squabbled over among parents who couldn't get along. I remember an anecdote a while back of a judge who told two parents who were divorced and were arguing about custody of their children, because the children, you know, go to dad on this weekend and mom on that weekend. And the judge, he flat out said, you know what I'm going to require? The children get to live in one of these homes, and you, mom and dad, get to commute each weekend, because you're the reason that this discord is in their home. Why should they have to shuttle around and be destabilized? Perhaps you shouldn't. So I think that's a very strong and, you know, strong position, one that many people in our culture wouldn't take. But no, I firmly agree with you, Stephen, that divorce is certainly a tragedy. And that's something that we have to fight for the family, both in the legal sphere, but more in the pastoral sphere, to give married couples the practical tools and the graces they need so that their marriages can be strong and they don't fall apart in these ways. So don't know what you think of that.
Sir, okay, can I speak now?
Sure.
Oh, thank you. What I meant was the tragedy is that, and if anyone tries to dispute this, then I don't know what to tell you. But in 80 to 90% of the cases, the father gets to see the child on the weekend, every other weekend, and 12 days gets spent with the mother and 2 days gets spent with the father. You can ask anybody. The status quo in the United States is that the woman can divorce and the kids go to the woman, and the father gets to see their child every other weekend for 2 days. Mm-hmm. And the point being,
right,
that some would argue after Vatican II with the women that can read the epistle and the women can serve as altar servers and the women run the RCIA and the women teach the catechesis and the women and that some would argue that the role, the gender roles, the traditional gender roles, and they make be mistaken about wearing a veil during the Tridentine Mass. A lot of traditional radical traditionalists have that wrong. But they might argue that after Vatican II, Catholic society is afraid to take on women. And how is it that a woman can divorce her husband and go and get an abortion, and he may never even be informed of it and have no say in it? Again, the women are running everything. And I love my wife, and I have 5 kids with her. But if nobody's willing to speak about the women get full child custody, the women run everything, and nobody's even willing to call that out after a synod on the family, and that never even gets brought to the forefront of our discussion here.
Okay, well, I would agree with something you have noted about custody, though I would disagree with your causal analysis, that even radical feminists would agree with and factually, there's really no dispute here, that in cases of custodial dispute about who is given sole or majority custody over children, time and time again, that in family courts tend to be biased towards mothers rather than fathers in that regard, even in cases where it seems that the father may be able to provide a more well-adjusted and healthy home life than the mother. Even radical feminists admit there is a bias towards women in family court. There's not really a dispute there. Though what's funny is the feminists say, well, that's an example of patriarchy and prejudicial views towards women, that women are only good for being caregivers. So I would say that, one, the fact that women, their role in liturgy has increased somewhat since the Second Vatican Council, with serving as altar servers or lectors or things like this. That is quite a stretch for me to see that in family law court, you know, with Catholics, non-Catholics, that there's a bias there. I can't see any logical connection between the two in that regard. But I think, though, that there are Catholics, you know, who fully embrace the Second Vatican Council, who would have no problem in saying that it's unfair to determine custody of children based solely on stereotypes of parenting, that what should always be done in the case of divorce and a broken family is do what is best for everyone's interests involved, especially the children, who it's not their fault the family has become broken and is now going through divorce and the trauma of that. Do what is in their best interest. In some cases, that may be sole or majority custody with a mother. In other cases, it may be with the father. So I have no objection to that. And I think that the Synod and the Family and other meetings of the bishops and of the magisterium will embrace these different issues. But I think that looking at the larger issues, more important of, you know, let's not quibble as much about who gets sent with whom, though there should always be equity there and what's best for the child. Let's keep these marriages together in the first place. That is the number one here. You know, let's, you know, it's like, yeah, there's, you know, there's, I got a broken toe over here, but I've got a broken leg over on my other side. Let's get the core understanding of marriage and family, the domestic church, and the awesome responsibilities that man and woman enter into in the sacred bond of matrimony, both to each other and to any children God may bless them with. I mean, I truly believe that for the church to survive in the new millennium, we have to reinforce the family. The family is going to be our protection against the decline of culture, of the state. I mean, you know, if the Roman Empire could fall, the states we see today could fall as well, but the church will remain. And what builds the church up, the church as a whole, is the domestic church. And that would be the family.
Okay, Stephen, thank you for joining us on Catholic Answers Live. Great to have you part of the program today. And Darley, we'll go to you next in Los Angeles, then up to Ottawa, Canada with Alan, and many more of you to talk with Trent Horn today. Why do you reject Catholic morality? That is our question that we're putting out to you today. If that applies to you, give us a call, 888-318-7884. Back right after this short break.
We'll be right back with more great answers from Trent today on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers' annual campaign is almost over. We've raised much of what we need to enter the coming year in a strong position, but we still need to raise more. This is Catholic Answers' most important fundraiser of the year, and there's still time for you to help. Your response to the campaign will determine how much apostolic work Catholic Answers can do in the next year. To make your donation, just go to Catholic.com and click the annual campaign banner, or call us toll-free at 888-291-8000. That's the annual campaign banner at Catholic.com, or call toll-free at 888-291-8000.
A lot of people think that street evangelization involves yelling out of a bullhorn telling people that they're going to hell. Not so with St. Paul's Street Evangelization. Our methods are non-confrontational and effective. We simply offer information on the Catholic faith along with rosaries, miraculous medals, and prayer. Pope Francis wrote about how beautiful it is to see street preachers joyfully bringing Jesus to every corner of the earth. Street evangelization is fun and fruitful. Join us today at streetevangelization.com.
Hi, this is Trent Horn. If you live in the Atlanta, Georgia area, be sure to join me on Wednesday, January 18th at 7 p.m. at the Georgia International Convention Center as I debate Professor James White on the topic, Can Christians Lose Their Salvation? For more information, check out the Catholic Answers Facebook page and join us for what promises to be a great time as we openly discuss this highly debated issue.
Hard Sayings, A Catholic Approach to Answering Bible Difficulties, is the new book by apologist Trent Horn. A comprehensive look at dozens of the most confounding passages in Scripture that offers clear, reasonable, and Catholic keys to unlocking their true meaning. Don't be left without an answer again. Order your copy of Hard Sayings today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Thanks for being with us. Jerry Escher filling in here today with Trent Horn. Why do you reject Catholic morality? That is our question today. Right before we go back to the calls, you see a lot of TV commercials telling you what $5 can get you. Well, it can get you some fast food meal deals, or it can get you some great information about how to be persuasive in your pro-life conversations in a very charitable way, but I think convincing way. And that is Trent Horn's book. It's called Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue. It is being sold right now for $5. What? $5? Yes. That's a savings of over 70%. So just wanted to remind you, keep that in front of you there. During the show today, you can call. The customer service line is still open at 888-291-8000, and the shop at Catholic.com never closes. So, it's important enough that you might want to get a few copies for your friends and family as well. $5 per copy, Persuasive Pro-Life by Trent Horn. All right, Darley, thanks for waiting through that break there and for your patience. It is so good to have you with us, Darley. Welcome from Los Angeles.
Thank you. Yes, you know, I'm very happy with Catholic morality and their moral teachings, but I'm balking at this one thing, and maybe I'm just misunderstanding it. It's an end-of-life issue. Hmm. I heard someone in Catholic radio accuse somebody of murder because their grandparents didn't have IVs when they were in hospice. So to me, it seems kind of like unrealistic that everybody has to have a feeding tube and an IV if they can't eat or drink, you know, in their terminal, you know, getting close to death. But maybe I misunderstood. Is it a moral teaching that you have to have an IV and a feeding tube when you're in hospice?
Darley, it's a moral teaching of the Church that we ought to provide human beings at every stage of their life, including at the terminal or end last stages of life, ordinary care that they are due in dignity of being a human being. So this would include keeping them warm, providing comfort, and the most basic levels of sustenance a human being requires, which would always be food and water. So what I would say is that in these cases, it's wrong for us, even if someone is at the end of their life, to starve someone to death or let them dehydrate to death, to end their... The clear example, that would be Terri Schiavo. Terri Schiavo did not have a terminal illness. She was in a persistent vegetative state. And the courts declared that because her quality of life was too low for them to consider worth living, her feeding tube was removed. That was the way she received food. And so she starved to death, essentially, or she dehydrated to death. So I would say, one, if you are taking away food or water with the purpose of ending that person's life, then that would be a grave evil. You're starving. We should never starve other people to death. Now, sometimes at the end of life, as a person's body begins to shut down, some of their organs related to processing food, like digestion or even taking water, no longer function properly, so that it's actually they're near the point of death, so close that it's actually causing pain and not helping them to eat or drink. In those cases, depriving a person of food or water, you're not doing it with the intent to end their life. You're just trying to provide them comfort as they're essentially on death's door. So the principle would be, one cannot deprive a person of food and water if you're in depriving them of that ordinary care. That is what's ending their life. But if you're helping them to be comfortable as they transition into dying, there may be cases where they're not able to receive food or water. Do you see the difference of what I'm talking about?
Yes, that makes a big difference. I appreciate you clarifying that.
Okay.
So it's not that the person wants to be giving a person starvation or dehydration. It's just their medical condition. It's just they just can't take in fluids or feeding tube. Thank you for clarifying that. Not so
yeah,
I can say I'm in favor of Catholic teaching then. You
well,
can
always good to hear. And see, it's just about correcting the misunderstanding. So just to reaffirm for our listeners that we have an obligation to provide people with ordinary care. You should feed people. We should give them drink. We should give them warmth. So even if someone is dying, you don't turn the heat off to their room and open it up, and especially if it's January and it's Minnesota, you know, and let them freeze to death. No, you provide warmth, comfort, food, water, pain alleviation. You're not obligated to provide extraordinary means. You don't have to keep them on a heart-lung machine indefinitely. But we shouldn't be starving people to death. We shouldn't be dehydrating them to death. But we also understand, as I said, that sometimes at the very end of life, a person is just not capable of receiving this. So in that point, we're just providing comfort care. And it's not they're not dying of starvation when we don't feed them. They're dying because their body is experiencing a massive shutdown of their organs because they're, you know, near at the very end of their life. So it's about asking, what is our purpose? Is it for the patient's benefit or to quickly bring about their demise? And that is a key intention that we bring to in end-of-life questions.
All right. Thank you, Darlie from L.A. Thanks for joining us on Catholic Answers Live. This hour will likely end with Alan in Ottawa, Ontario, Julie, Jordan, Lloyd, and Laura. We have another hour with Trent Horn, so please, if you can stay on the line during a short top-of-the-hour break, we'll help all of you. But, Alan, we have time for you up there in Ottawa. How are you, Alan? Happy New Year.
I'm well. Happy New Year to you. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I guess what I wanted to talk about was two problems with the question and then why I would be skeptical of Catholic morality. And I think the previous caller pointed out one of the problems with the question is that Catholics don't agree on what is moral. Like, you know, for example, contraception, some people say that it's immoral, but in the States, I think 80% of Catholics think that it's moral. So it's tough to say what is Catholic morality. The other problem with the question is that you can accept some parts of Catholic morality and reject others. So it's hard to say, you know, do you accept it or not? Because there's so many aspects to it. But I guess the main reason why I would be very skeptical of what the Catholic Church would have to say about morality is because the Church has no credibility. The Church has been guilty of some of the worst crimes you could think of in terms of morality. And so when they come to the table and say, well, here's what's moral and what's not, you know, you kind of raise an eyebrow and go, well, what are you talking about? Look at what you've done. You have no business saying anything about what's moral or not. So that's why I would be very, very skeptical of the Catholic Church's view on morality.
Okay. Let me address two of those points. First, the fact that there's disagreement that not all Catholics accept what the Church teaches, it doesn't follow from that what the Church teaches is false or that we ought not subscribe to it. Alan, would you agree that any moral system that is proposed by a group or a person, people will disagree amongst themselves about any moral system, but does it follow from that no moral system is correct because there's going to be disagreement?
The disagreement goes to what the moral system is. So if you say, no, the Catholic Church says that contraception is immoral, and here's why, and you point to certain rules. Other people will say, no, Catholicism means, you know, contraception is okay, and here's why. So there's
okay, well, unfortunately, we're out of time. Definitely call back at another case. I would say, no, we can look at the magisterial documents, and people are always going to disagree. As Hadley Arks once said, an absence of consensus does not equal an absence of truth. I would say when we look at the arguments of those who put forward the traditional teaching of the Church, they stand up to scrutiny, and the dissenters do not, and that the Church has held the deposit of faith and morality for 2,000 years from Jesus Christ. And if you disagree, call back, and when we have more time, we'll take it further.
All right, Alan, thank you. And like I said, the others of you on hold, you will lead off hour number two with Trent Horn. Why do you reject Catholic morality? There's a line open, 888-318-7884, if you'd like to join us on this Monday broadcast.